dobrodošla v podkastu Darovi materinstva, v katerem se tedensko pogovarjam z mamicami o radostih in izzivih materinstva, da lahko ti bolje razumeš sebe in z večjo lahkotnostjo ter humorjem hodiš po svoji poti. Tvoja gostiteljica sem Lara Kastelic.
This is first English edition of otherwise Slovenian podcast because my guest is Astrid, an Australian woman who spent the majority of her adult life in France and now has a baby with a Slovenian partner. In this podcast, you will hear the story of one traveling mama's challenges through geographical separation, pandemic distancing, and some general feelings of isolation. And before we start, let me say a few more words about Mother Nature Project. Mother Nature Project is a result of international collaboration of a team of women from 5 countries. And together we created a guidebook and card deck to accompany women on their transformational journey of motherhood. You can find both guidebook and cards in English, Slovenian, Italian, and Hungarian on the website mothernatureproject.org.
Good morning, Astrid, or let's say good afternoon. You know, for me, it's like 6 a.m. It was quite a stretch to agree to this conversation. But for you, it's like midday, you know. So how is it down there in Australia?
Well, hello. it's 4:30 in the afternoon. And today is a very hot day. So we're polar opposites, literally. Day and night, hot and cold.
We are. I'm here all warmed up, you know, in a blanket and, you know, like snuggling, and you are like in the short sleeves. It's like, oh, yes, I'm sweating, you know.
It's an exceptionally hot day, but we are heading into summer, so this will become the norm.
Wonderful. So how are you otherwise feeling those days, like, or past few months? What's happening in your life?
Yeah, well, I came to Australia at the end of January for a shortish visit, shortish meaning I was thinking maybe 2 months, with my son, who is now 15 months old. So he was just on 6 months, I think, when we arrived. So when the pandemic hit, it just seemed like a better idea to stay here for a bit longer to see how things panned out. And eight months later, we're still here. And we're going to stay here for another couple of months, I think.
Okay. So where are you otherwise based?
Well, good question. No, I've actually been living in France for most of the last 20 years. But a few years ago, I started splitting my life between France, where I was working and living and working, and Slovenia, because I met a Slovenian man. And as our love story grew, I started spending more and as much time as I could in Slovenia and returning to France for work. So there was a lot of upheaval, shall we say. And I didn't have the time or the opportunity to really set down roots in any one place because my life was so split between work in France, family in Australia, and my partner in Slovenia and our budding life together there. So I've literally been traveling between the 3 countries for the last couple of years.
Wow. I mean, I've been traveling quite a lot in my life, mostly due to work, but what you're explaining seems like, you know, like a splitting my personality, and it's feel like a lot of stress and, you know, moving around and tension.
It's uprooting, literally. I did, you know, consciously make a choice to try and shift my life away from France when I was focusing on my relationship, and I also wanted to spend more time with my family in Australia. But I was still working in France, so I was returning there all the time for work. And I never really let go of that, because that's been an integral part of me and my entire life for the last 18 years I was living there. So it did create a lot of challenges, and I have gotten very tired of living out of suitcases and not sort of setting up a permanent base anywhere.
I feel you.
Yeah. And so then I'll just add this a little bit. So then I was working in France when I discovered I was pregnant.
Oh.
So I spent the majority of my pregnancy in France and decided to give birth there as it made sense to have that continuity, and also to be in a, I think there's a, this is where I think the uprooting and the constant change starts becoming very unattractive when you're expecting a baby, because you're almost biologically primed to want to settle down, to roost, to nest, to create a base. And I think, you know, my safe place, because it's where I had been living for so long, and it's, you know, a foreign country, but I'm a citizen now, I speak the language, it was you know, an easier place for me to imagine giving birth. So I gave birth in France. And you know, I've traveled from France to Slovenia and then Slovenia to Australia since my son was born.
If I heard you, understood you correctly, you spent your pregnancy in France. Mm-hmm. But your partner was not there. How were you managing this by yourself?
Yeah, so I, the first 5 months, I was in France, and then I traveled. I needed to see family. I traveled to Australia. I traveled to Slovenia during that time. And then I traveled to Australia, and then I went back to Slovenia and spent some time there before going back to France for the last, you know, month and a half. My partner came over to visit a couple of times, and I went over to Slovenia a couple of times, so we were able to share some of the time together. But it was hard, and it was not at all how I imagined I might prepare for parenthood. It was a surprise and at the same time a choice, because I chose to continue in France. Once my work had finished, I chose to stay there to continue, because I needed the continuity. I needed it, actually. And it's also for that reason that that's one of the reasons I engaged a doula to be present with me at my birth, because as I was, I gave birth in a very lovely maternity center that's quite focused on natural birth, and it's very woman-led, like the mother-led in terms of the birthing process and approach. But I really wanted to have somebody present at the birth that I had done some preparation with, and because I couldn't do any of the preparation with my partner, I also, because he came over for the birth, of course, and I also wanted somebody who wasn't one of the midwives to be present as a translator for him, because he doesn't speak French, and I didn't want to be taking on that role. And I you know, it was, so she was a beautiful medium to, you know, to communicate with him and be present for me and work with the midwives. It was a really lovely ensemble in the end.
Wonderful. I was not thinking about the language aspect, but I guess, yeah, it's demanding.
Yeah, look, and it's one of the reasons I decided to give birth in France as opposed to Slovenia, because Slovenia was an option, given that, you know, my baby is also, you know, is half Slovenian, and my partner was there. And I know a lot of Slovenians speak English, but the idea of giving birth where I wouldn't understand the first language of the medical staff, for me, became too frightening, because I thought, if anything goes wrong, I don't know, I was scared. I know women do it. I know there are a lot of women who do that even, but I didn't feel comfortable. I wanted to I wanted to feel I could communicate firsthand if I needed to.
Makes sense to me. So. And how was your birth? What was your birth experience?
Yeah, it was intense. It was actually quite quick for a first baby, apparently. I went, and also a bit of a surprise, I went to the maternity because it was 5 days before my due date. And I went because I suspected my waters had broken. And actually, I had tested positive for, what's it called in English? The group B streptococcal bacteria, which meant that, if for whoever's not familiar, it meant that if my waters broke and contractions didn't start, I would need to be induced and I would be put on intravenous antibiotics pretty much immediately. Because once the amniotic sac had been ruptured, the baby was at risk of getting the bacteria. So I went just to thinking, oh, my water's broken. I don't know. I don't think so. But I'd better check because it's serious if they have. And they had. But I had no contractions. So they put me on antibiotics and they said, oh, we're going to induce you. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to be induced. And they said, well, we'll just see if we can wait till tonight. And they came back and said, no, we're going to do it in 2 hours. So go for a walk, come back, and then we'll do it. And so my partner and I, we left the maternity clinic, and there's a park just a couple of minutes away. We walked to the park. But I think even before we left, I had my first contraction. We walked to the park, and I could barely walk back because I went from, like, closed cervix to a 6 to 7 centimeter dilation in an hour. So it was really quite rapid. So we got back and it was just like, okay, well, the baby's going to come now. And so you're in labor and everything's, you know. So it went quite fast. I had to call my doula and say, can you know, please come along. She was there a few hours later. And everything was going quite well, except that when I got to the point where I could push, we discovered that the baby hadn't actually turned. He hadn't put himself into a position where he could be birthed. And so I had to stop pushing, and we tried a few techniques, a Rebozo technique, a Mexican technique, and also a position from spinning babies, a side lying position to try and shift my little baby so he could come out, and he did eventually. And so I was able to birth him without intervention, which was, So it was intense. It was kind of fast. It had these little, I don't know. I don't even know if you can call it a hiccup. I mean, I sort of think out of all the birth stories, it sort of went really smoothly. But there was this moment where I couldn't push through the contractions, and I was meant to be pushing, and that was really hard. It was quite intensely painful at that point. But, you know, when I talked about it with my doula later, I got really scared that I was just going to lose all my energy and I couldn't help this baby come out. And afterwards I sort of asked her what happened, and she said, you got scared. And it's funny because she prepared me for that moment. I still didn't get it. She's like, we talked about that. And I said, yeah, but I didn't get the sense of how big that was, you know, she was like, this is going to happen. And she was really, she emphasized that moment of fear and that moment of a real transition, and that, you know, coincides with the ring of fire and with, you know, it's the moment where the mother feels like she's going to give up, or she's going to die, or she can't do it. And there is that, you know, there is that moment. And we talked about it, and I remember talking about it, but I just didn't get how colossal that moment is. And so when it came, I didn't even recognize it. And I think the other particularity of my birth was because of the position the baby was in, I didn't get waves of contractions. It was like one constant contraction the whole time with no relief. There were three moments it actually stopped for a second and I could take a breath and go, okay, prepare for the next contraction. And that really affected me because I, the whole time through, and this is where the, I think also the fear came. I just thought, I just need a moment to breathe. I've got to work out how to do this. You know, like it's like you're battling all the time, but what you really want is just a second to, I needed a second to regroup so I could work it out again, you know, and it didn't come. And so it was interesting. It was a, I think of it as a really beautiful experience.
Yeah. I mean, it all turned out well. So I think
it did. That's the thing. It all turned out well. Baby was 100% healthy. And despite the, you know, they were monitoring him. I had the monitor on the entire time because it kept moving. They couldn't confirm that he was actually okay. And there were a few moments when, you know, he was showing a few signs of stress, and this is what they were looking out for. But that was only towards the end. And so then I think it was over before they needed to act upon that.
Mm.
But yeah, it was, I think I expected it to be, we talked about birthing as being an initiation. It's a complete transformation, a complete initiation. And I felt that my birth really gave that to me. It gave me the challenges I needed to, I guess, that I'm going to learn from for the rest of my life. I still think back on that day and think, oh, how could I have dealt with that? Like, how could I deal with that again? Like, how can I? We mentioned recurring themes earlier. And sometimes I think now with the constant sleep deprivation and the sort of the cycle of just sometimes, you know, struggling to get through each day in the best possible way, because, you know, I am still quite severely sleep deprived and I find that hard. And every now and then I feel that feeling of, oh, I just need a breath. I just need a moment where it just stopped for a second so I could take a deep breath and then I can keep going. And you don't get that moment. You don't get it in labor and you don't get it in life. I'm quite aware that I need to learn how to find that well of peace to draw upon whilst in action. You don't get to stop to draw upon it. You've got to work out how to drink from it while mm-hmm. you keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, nice connection. I like the thought that you said that, you know, this birthing experience gave you so much that you learn from it and kind of take from it, you know, for the rest of your life. I'm not a mother yet, and I actually can't imagine how something can be so powerful. But it is definitely a recurring theme that women speak about, that, you know, birthing or like this empowering birthing experience does give them so much to take from further down the motherhood when it's challenging.
Because I think my birth was empowering, even though I, you know, I reached that critical stage of despair. It was empowering, and I've heard other friends or, you know, other women talk about very difficult births that were quite traumatic for them. And I feel I don't feel traumatized by mine, but I still feel there are really hard lessons that will haunt me for the rest of my life. And I have to be careful each time to remind myself not to just remember those moments, because I don't want to end up everything sort of drifting away or dropping away in just those hard moments that I might regret or I might wish happened differently. I don't want them to be the only ones that remain. but they're definitely, that's part of it.
And so what happened after you gave birth? How the life unraveled?
Well, I had a little home base for the next few months in Paris. And so I stayed there. I had the privilege, I think, and great luxury of having my mother come to stay with me for 2 months. Well, she didn't stay with me, but she stayed, you know, she was right next door, more or less, and she came and took care of me and cared for me and cared for, you know, supported me over those first crucial 2 months. My partner was able to stay for the first few weeks, then he had to leave, and then he came back just after my mother left and was able to stay for another few weeks again, and then he returned to Slovenia. So we had, you know, it was fragmented, and we weren't able to begin that part of life together, really. I waited in Paris, or I stayed in Paris, until I felt strong enough, I think, both physically and emotionally, and, you know, with enough courage to pack up and leave. And so then we went to Slovenia and stayed there for nearly 2 months. So we could be with, you know, dad and, you know, his family. And after that, I then returned to Australia so I could introduce the baby to the rest of my family, my sister, my dad, and here we still are. So it's been quite, there's been a lot of movement. A lot of suitcases, a lot of packing. I was worried about this actually before the baby was born. And I remember asking questions of people or focusing on this a little bit and realizing that even if my life, although this constant traveling didn't suit me anymore or doesn't really suit me anymore. But even if my life maintained this level of traveling, I guess this level of traveling, it didn't matter so much to my baby if I could provide a safe, continuous base for him. And so this was something I paid attention to, I think, because, you know, in a lot of the information I received or the conversations I had, we talk a lot about providing security and, you know, and yeah, security for children. But that security can be offered even if you change geographical location, I've discovered, which is, I think, one of the biggest lessons I've started to realize for myself as well. It's an aspect, I suppose, of, or an approach I've also tried to apply to myself, in the sense that through learning to parent my baby, I've also been becoming more aware of how to parent myself and how to truly find what is a through line or an inner stability that's not destabilized by geographical displacement or by change or disruption. Because those ideas, I had had them before, but I think I was perhaps looking in the wrong place or thinking I could just change my mind and switch. You know, for years I was so happy traveling, because with my work I traveled a lot and I would extend those travels. I traveled a lot and I loved it. And I loved having my suitcases and getting on planes and this. And then all of a sudden it became really tedious, tiresome, I suppose, to be in this constant impermanence. And I suppose that's where I've been looking, you know, to try and find that parallel for myself, to, you know, how I'm trying to provide from a personal point of view a solid, safe base for my baby. How can I also provide that for myself without looking to some sort of material structure to be representative, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
No, that it be a house or a country or.
You know. Okay. So, what did you learn about yourself about that? What gives you this inner stability, regardless of where you are?
Oh, I haven't found it yet.
Ah, okay, good. You're just exploring.
Oh gosh, you know, I was thinking, you know, because we talked about how, you know, we delve into what things have I learned through motherhood, and it's like I haven't learned anything yet. I've noticed what I have to learn. That's about it. You know, these are still just like chapter titles, and no, it's true, because there is, you know, like I said, I felt the birthing, you know, was transformative and initiating, and it is. And I feel like my entire life has completely changed since my baby was born. And at the same time, I'm still just working out what it is and how to do it. And yeah, it's a work in progress.
Okay. I'll ask you, you know, some years down the line, you know, how do you keep yourself together while traveling around or something?
Yeah.
Like but for example, you're now in Australia for already quite some months, also due to COVID reality, you know, and how are you managing that? It's like, it seems like another, not just geographical barrier, but just like another thing that happened to you. And it's kind of, it's, you know, creating some conditions.
There's many layers to it, because there is, yeah, geographically, I find it, it eats me up inside being so far away from Europe, for being so far away from my baby's dad, but then being far away from each other. And at the same time, I'm very grateful to the time here spent with my family, because that is really precious. And it was unimaginable. We wouldn't have designed this year to be like this, and I'm very grateful for that. But you know, even in my family situation, we're being, you know, even particularly we're taking particular precautions with coronavirus, for family reasons. And so it's been even further isolating, because the truth is that even my sister can't hold my baby at the moment. She's maintaining a distance. And so the only people who are physically in contact with him is myself and my parents, because I'm living with my parents at the moment. And you know, social contacts have been severely limited. I'm actually in Sydney, but where I grew up, but most of the people I know don't live here anymore. So I still have some friends here, but the vast majority aren't here anymore. Catching up is complicated at the moment, even with family, and then with all the babies and the social distancing, it's made it really layer upon layer of physical and social distance. I have to say that is a preoccupation at the moment of mine. And again, it's, you know, like I keep, you know, I think about it and try not to ruminate on it, but just try and look at what I can do to try and improve on, you know, what's actually there. And it's just a daily struggle, because I might start from square one every day and just say, okay, today, all right, you know, I'm going to go, you know, I spend a lot of the day on my own with my baby, and I love that. And at the same time, I find it, I often feel a bit empty inside, because I'm not nourishing my inner soul and who I am. And I can see what, I look at steps of, you know, how can I improve that? And almost every time what stops me is just, I haven't got energy to do that. I'm too tired. So it's just, it is a bit of a cycle I might go through every day. And I think maybe I'm making tiny millimeter steps of progress each day. That's about, you know, all you can hope for, really.
Wow. Wow. I mean, what I hear is this, like, really strong experience of isolation on social level. Related, you know, to this combination of geographical and COVID reality. And you actually can't do much about it. You just have to work it out day by day.
I'm aware that, you know, this, a few people talked to me about the desperate isolation that a lot of mothers feel when their baby's been born. And you know, a year later, I'm still, I certainly felt it quite acutely in the months after birth, and then I think because I left sort of my home base and moved to another country and then another country again, and it dissipates. You don't see so much how you're not connecting with people because there's movement and there's a lot going on and there are different people to focus on. And I know that it's been, you know, I think quite well documented and researched, this phenomena of loneliness in early parenthood. Mm. It's not just mums, it's also dads that feel it. I could feel that the context of my life has impacted on that. Of, you know, as I was explaining, the years before, I had already started to, you know, kind of uproot everything. So this has also had a big impact, and coronavirus has had an impact, and I think this has also given me time to look at myself and look at how I function and look at how I react and how I relate to people and how I organize myself to be in contact with people, to relate to them, or to, and so it's also, I think, always a time of self-awareness and searching. And I find I have to work at finding peace with that rather than go back to the guilt of, you know, I didn't do that or I haven't done and I've got people around me. That's the other thing, like, that there are, I'm living with my parents, and that, you know, it's often saves me. But even so, it doesn't replace having work and, you know, friends that you catch up with and, or that you can catch up with easily. You know, it's not impossible now. It's just, it's all different now, right? The corona, it's different for everybody. It's more virtual. It's less physical. It's different for everyone. But I think it's compounded.
And I can tell that because of the time difference, it was quite challenging to catch up with the two of us, you know, finding a good time to have a chat. It was like 3-day negotiation and conversation to make it fit.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. And I have found that really challenging. I found that really, really challenging with friends and family in Europe. That's been hard, and not everyone understands that. I've felt some heavy expectations from some people to contact them or to be available, you know, in ways that I'm just not capable of at the moment. And it's hard to accept that in myself, let alone reach out to someone or hope that they might understand that too, because it's unsatisfactory for everyone. I think I feel there's one little element I haven't acknowledged, I suppose. Like this sense of, just about this sense of isolation, I can feel that it's got more to do with my inside position or my mindset than the actual reality, because I have friends and there are people around me. I truly don't have oodles of energy right now because I am truly sleep deprived, and I've been functioning on survival level for quite some time, which won't surprise a lot of mothers of kids. I don't have a baby that sleeps through the night. And it's, you know, long term, it is hard. I guess I have that comfort of knowing who I can reach out to. I just sometimes have to get through that hurdle of, I really don't feel capable of doing that. I don't have the energy. I don't have the strength or the courage to just be, you know, my broken shadowed self right now with, with, you know, these people. So there's an element, I think it's, because, you know, when you talk about isolation in early parenthood, there's a lot of the very concrete life shift of you're not working anymore, or you physically can't join in a lot of the activities you were doing before because they're not appropriate anymore. Your life focus shifts, your life direction shifts. And so that creates change. And then there's also the internal workings that react to that in one way or another. And I really feel I'm trying to do that work at the moment because so often I think there's a tool right there. I just don't know how to go and use it. I don't know how to pick it up. But I can see there's a tool there, and that's positive. I think for some women might not even have tools to around them. You know, some women haven't got their parents or their, you know, family members or this or that. So it's, yeah, I guess that's what I wanted to say. There's the concrete situation. There's also our mindset and our approach to it, which is a hell of a life's work. I think changing that is huge.
Yes. I just want to say, you know, to put, you know, like a bow on top of the story and cherry on the cake. What is this, like a golden nugget of wisdom or something, you know, something that you would like to give to other mothers as an essence of your learning so far?
My first reaction is I haven't got a golden nugget. I mean, I'm still looking at other mums and wondering how they do it. How are they coping so well? And okay. So when I try and think of what golden nugget of wisdom, or I like that phrase, golden nugget, what essence of what I've learned I could share with other women, I have a lot of difficulty because I don't actually necessarily consider anything of my experiences to be particularly special or profound, but I think that itself is the kind of sacred wisdom of this experience. It's really humbling. I get daily reminders from being with my son and from watching him grow and from feeding him, or, you know, learning how to care for him. I get from all the anxiety, from the fears, from the doubts, I get daily reminders of how fragile everything is, how vulnerable we are. And somehow the kindness that we can have towards ourselves in those moments of fear and anxiety, it really gives us a lot of strength. I've learned to be much more patient with myself than ever before in my life. And I've also learned that through being patient and just observing, you know, this little baby growing, being present. I think that's probably all I'm trying to say, that the most valuable thing I can do as a, you know, as a parent with him is to be present with him. It doesn't have to be geographically, but I just mean to be real and entirely myself and present with him. And if I can do that with myself and with other people as well, you know, it's a life lesson that sort of extends.
Yeah.
I guess that's, it's what hits home for me every day.
Thank you.
It took a lot to get to that. I still don't know if that's really what I'm trying to say, but
it's good. It's good. And I think it's kind of sums up your experience. And I would just like to say thank you at this point for this last sentences and for the whole conversation and for the courage to share.
And thank you.
And there to express what is there for you.
Well, thank you, Lara. It was a gift, actually, a surprising gift to be able to share this with you, and other people will listen. But I think there's something very healing about telling some of these stories. Mm. And I find it often, it feels very loving to trust in being able to share them. Mm.